Well, now the case to combine disease surveillance and climate modelling to preempt future pandemics. In the last 3 years, the World Health Organization has declared two public health emergencies of international concern, COVID-19 and monkeypox. University of Canterbury epidemiologist Associate Professor Orindum Basu says these are not separate issues. At the same time, extreme weather events are being reported continuously across the world and are expected to become more frequent and intense. He says there's a better chance of suppressing infectious diseases with an integrated approach using predictive modelling and surveillance, used in both infectious disease control and climate change. The spread of disease from animals to humans is on the rise, with the increasing destruction of natural habitats from global warming, more international travel, and a sharp rise in wildlife trade. Dr. Basu says this makes a perfect storm of transmission, and as long as surveillance systems depend on diseases that have already emerged, we risk sleepwalking into the next pandemic. Kia ora and welcome, Orindum. Thanks very much for your time.
Oh, kia ora. Good morning.
So we're talking about the zoonotic diseases, aren't we? The ones that transfer from animals to humans. They've always been, but are we seeing that happening more often and more quickly than in the past?
Yes, possibly, because almost all the zoonotic diseases and pandemics, when they start, they always start in animals. And then at some point, they spill over to human beings. So as we are encroaching more into the animal habitats, as animal trades increase, as more human-animal interactions increase over time, you're likely to see more of the pandemics and epidemics that started their lives as zoonoses spilling over to human beings. So that's the reason why we are probably going to see quite a lot of them over the next few years.
What is the nature of the animal trade to which you refer?
Well, it depends on, in the recent years, well, the data that we have till about 2016, and there are more data coming in, is that there is a demand for exotic pets and, sometimes exotic meat supply and things like that, of animals that never used to be, sourced for either keeping as pets or as for their food. And that has been increasing. And that's something that's quite worrisome in many countries.
When it comes to the two concurrent emergencies that have been declared, COVID-19 and monkeypox, is it unusual to have two global outbreaks this major, this close together?
Yes, definitely, because this was unprecedented. As you can see, that COVID itself was quite a problem. It has still not gone away. There are cases, we're still grappling with it. And when this was going on, we saw that there was emergence of monkeypox. Now, two zoonoses occurring almost back to back in 3 years' time has not happened in, we haven't seen this. So this is for the first time that you have got in 3 years' time. You've got two pandemics, not pandemics, but definitely public health emergencies of international concern being declared. So we have to say that this is unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. The danger is, of course, that once they've emerged and once they've been declared, it's very hard to stop them in their tracks. They are novel to us. They are novel to our systems. And this comes to your point of being able to try and identify the emergence of these diseases much earlier. How is that possible?
Well, in order to do that, because if, as we know, that zoonoses begin in the animals, so the first task is to find out when are they beginning in the animals. And so in order to do that, you need to create some kind of surveillance systems in them, and you need to connect the veterinarian services with the human health services. So now if you have the animal experts are working in hand in glove with the epidemiologists. And then if we backtrack and add the third element of climate modelers and environmental health experts, who can then work together to develop a whole system, which is now referred to as One Health Surveillance System, that provides us a pathway that we can probably use to track and preempt and prevent future epidemics to emerge in the scale that we've seen.
Staying with the current disease surveillance system, I understand it's dated. It dates back to the 19th century. What happens currently to endeavour to give early warning?
Oh, yeah. At the moment, what happens is this, that once the diseases have established, then we start tracking them. And then we say that, all right, there is an epidemic. So you see that by nature, it is somewhat retrospective. So once it happens, then we say, yes, it's happening. It's not in a way that we can predict and preempt it. And that's how it has been. I mean, it has, that is the practice. That's what we do. But what this framework is talking about is this, that let's figure out where are the points where we can find out that this is about to emerge and then stop them. That's the promise of One Health Disease Surveillance System. And in order to do that, then you need to have these three elements work together, which means that the environmental modeling, animal disease surveillance, and human disease surveillance.
The climate component, what will it tell us? What kinds of climate change are going to ferment or facilitate this zoonotic behaviour, or, you know, the occurrence?
Yeah, some of these we already know. For example, with the increasing temperatures, you know that with global warming, that creates an environment where microbes thrive. You know, so for example, viruses and, you know, bacteria, they have a chance to increase. Now, where are they occurring? How are they being, how are they growing? Which parts of the world are at higher risk? For example, we know that there has been thawing of the permafrost to some extent, releases new species of bacteria and things like that. So there are microbes that are being released, and microbes that are changing their shape, that they're getting mutated. If those are tracked, then you know that there is something that can, this is a trigger event, or these are the things that can then emerge into the probably animals that are that will now show the diseases. And then, of course, if we can start looking into the deforestation and the encroachment there, then you can see that there are chances of human-animal further contacts, and therefore there is a possibility that a disease will be emerging. And that's the kind of tracking that we're talking about here. Say, for example, with COVID, you saw that, and how we have experienced that a great tool was wastewater surveillance, and we can now track the course of COVID pandemic via wastewater surveillance. Now think in addition to that, if you wanted to put together at some point surveillance of the effluents from abattoirs and slaughterhouses, that gives you another window of what animal diseases are about to become dominant and stopping them. So that whole linkage between animal diseases and human diseases nexus can be broken that way.
So if you're looking at the abattoirs and the slaughterhouses, you're seeing what disease is prevalent among an animal species at a point in time, and then you could say, we need to watch out for this.
Yes. That's right.
What actions would you take in response, Arindam, if you had elevated concern for some reason, whether it was clear felling that brought a human population into contact with animals for the first time, or whether it were, indications of a new disease or a disease that has re-emerged in the abattoirs of a country or a region, what response would it prompt?
Yeah, and that would, there are quite a few things that you can do at that point. For example, you can run an investigation to see what are the sources of that, and then confine them, and the regular epidemic containment procedures and protocols that are in place will then be put into action, so that that protects maximum number of human beings and animals, and bring those into place. So those protocols and practices are already in place. What is being talked about is this, that we put them into practice earlier or sooner than you should normally do at the moment.
It obviously requires cooperation. It requires areas where things may be happening that are conducive to a pandemic beginning, or first cases of a novel disease in humans beginning, to cooperate. Exactly. To what extent is that cooperation happening?
Well, to some extent, they're happening. The World Health Organization has taken good proactive steps. They've set up the expert level group. The Africa CDC, as far as I understand, that they are approaching the One Health surveillance. In New Zealand, we have got One Health Aotearoa, which is a very active and set of professionals who are doing a lot of work on that field. You know that in New Zealand, as we know, that we have very good programs of wastewater surveillance. Australia is stepping up their One Health surveillance to a large extent. So a lot of that coordination between, you know, veterinary experts and the human health experts that are already happening, plus climate modelers are coming into the picture. And one thing that has definitely accelerated that pace of cooperation has been COVID. Because COVID has shown us that, you know, if we don't work together, then it's very difficult to contain, you know, present and future pandemics. So
another climate change risk is the melting of permafrost. And that releases a whole bunch of new pathogens that would then make their way into a local animal species. That's the risk. That's and then onwards to humans. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You have just exactly articulated that the concern that we have. Yeah.
When it comes to the clear felling, this is interesting. It's not only is it, I guess, opening up the opportunity or indicating humans coming closer to previously contained areas, but is this also where the exotic pets are actually being traded? And it's, you know, one is aware of some bans, international bans that have been attempted anyway on the trade in exotic animals or in endangered animals. But despite that, is there a real trade in, okay, this is clear felled, we've got these amazing animals here, that can be on-sold to other countries. That trade is thriving.
Oh, yes. And that's been the thing that is really driving many of the emerging zoonoses. For example, the first few cases of the monkeypox that was in the United States back in 2003, if I correctly understand, remember, that was driven by animal trade. And those are kind of examples that we are you can think of where you can see that, you know, if this is not really properly controlled, then if you do not know what's being traded and who's being trading what kind of infections and diseases, then that just multiplies these effects, and it becomes practically uncontrollable. So the problem is at many fronts. One health surveillance is one arm of this, but as you said, that it needs a lot of cooperation at many different levels.
What is happening with polio, by the way, which successful vaccination programs we thought had beaten into a significant retreat, at the very least, if not eradication? But what is now happening even in the United States?
Yes, what happened is that once you stop polio vaccination, or if you do not do a polio vaccination, these are ongoing, continuous events. You believe that they have been eradicated, but then there is international travel. If the vaccination is not kept up to the levels that are needed in some other countries in the United States, then these new infections get hold of it. And that's where you saw that there were wastewater surveillance systems that kind of caught them in the first place, and then the cases that there were. And so it's basically a matter of public health action that needs to be maintained in a continuous, ongoing manner. And as long as that is maintained, things are under control. The same thing with any other infectious disease, for example, flu, for instance, or others. So it's the same thing that we're seeing in polio as well.
So back to this bringing together of the modelling of the animal diseases, early indication of human disease and what's happening in climate, bringing these three sets of models together. The WHO is calling for it, a One Health approach. Is it happening in New Zealand? Is that kind of cooperation between, I don't know, animal vets, doctors, modellers, customs, whomever, is it happening?
The answer, I think, is yes, because as far as I understand, One Health Aotearoa has pushed a lot of, brought together the experts, and they have they organize conferences, they organize meetings. So those are the places where people are working. And definitely, as we know, that there has been, wastewater surveillance going on for some time. So the answer, in at least in the case of New Zealand, is yes, there is. I could tell you that. But whether that's happening in the sphere of surveillance, I do not know.
We would be the recipients, presumably, one presumes, the recipients of imported disease, more likely than not. And this begs the next question, and again, it was a great debate at the start of the COVID pandemic. At what point do you shut your borders? At what point do multiple countries shut borders? Have we learnt, analysed and learnt anything from the actions and when they happened in the COVID pandemic, Arindam?
That's a very difficult question to be to answer correctly, to be honest, because yes, you do shut borders, but when you do shut borders, there are other implications of the border closure. Of course, you will be confining infections to specific regions and expect that the infections will go away and then you reopen the border. But in reality, that probably does not happen as smoothly as our theories would predict, you see. So there would still be issues around people do not get properly vaccinated, new strains emerge, and when you relax the border opening, then the infections again start emerging in the new places. So, I mean, we can develop models and we can create mathematical formula and things like that, but they do not guarantee that the world will exactly behave the way we want. And so that's the reason why you have to be always on the lookout and be on guard that we have to preempt and understand and preempt the epidemics in specific locations when the borders are opened.
What it's saying, though, is that once it's happening, and it would take drastic measures again to stop spread. And that has been successful. You think of things like the Ebola virus in Africa. There have been successful, concentrated efforts to stop wider spread. But the real problem is what we were talking about earlier, isn't it? Which is that our way of living is rapidly increasing the frequency and the speed of these events, or at risk of.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, as it may be, but it is like that. Because once we start, because, you know, the human population is increasing, there has been loss of biodiversity. None of these can be refuted now. And what that makes us is this, that we are getting more and more vulnerable to these new forms of infections that are emerging because people are traveling across the world. The world has opened up. We can't stop these things. So we have to, the next best thing is to be on guard and we start putting our checks and balances in place.
Arindam, thank you very, very much. That is Associate Professor Arindam Basu of University of Canterbury.